and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Just to check, because I've closed all the windows in my house, but you can't hear the traffic, can you?
I can't hear any traffic, no.
Good, because I don't know what it is about either my road or this side of the street or whatever, but when a motorbike or a car goes past this house, it is the loudest flipping thing.
It rattles the house.
Oh, tell me about it. Like, you could, I could be somewhere that's already hearing like a... Christ, what kind of speed were you going at? I don't know. Maybe people just want to speed around my corner, speaking of Flash.
It's bikers just showing off. Remember that South Park episode of Bikers where they just like want to like make noise and kind of just that if people weren't paying attention to them, they were just kind of making noise, like even more noise. And even when they weren't on the bikes, they were like going, rah, bah, 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 just making the sounds of a bike so that people like, paid attention to them.
Are you saying that there's a bunch of Harley Davidson fans just purposely driving past my house just to show off?
Yeah. They're like, pay attention to me. I've got a loud machine.
It's like, stop it. I'm trying to watch telly. Ugh, ridiculous.
You are about to experience Trash Cinema. Oh my God.
Of the Trash Tapes. One man's trash is another man's treasure. I am your host, Johan Chapal, and the inflictor of pain. And join me, as usual, as my victim and DJ, Edward Harvey. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, thanks, mate. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I've had a week off, which is weird when actually we're in a situation where, you know, the world's on fire, so you can't really do much in a week.
Yeah, and a lot of the time, even if you're working, it kind of feels like a week off, doesn't it? But like a bad week off because you still got to do other stuff like work from home, but you're kind of like off. It's weird.
Oh, tell me. Sometimes there have been days where I forgot what day it was. It's like, oh, I've got to do stuff. It's like, today is Saturday. What? How do I know? Saturday? Saturday feels like a Tuesday for me these days.
Yeah. Oh. Weekends are meaningless at the moment.
Time is a construct, and it's all broken now thanks to COVID. But we're still getting through it, and it's good that what we decided to do this summer, basically, is obviously we start off with a bit of a corker this summer by having the Captain America 1990 watch along, which was that was fun. That was a good one. And I know we suggested it, but I think, you know what, we should totally do it. We are going to be doing the Summer of Superhero Schlock.
Yeah, definitely. I'm well up for that. Just continue, keep that theme going, you know?
Yeah, we're going to try and do is we're going to basically try and cram in as many bad or famously infamous superhero movies or things as all time and try and cram them in. So that's going to be a whirl. So we're going to move on to the next one. Now, we did Marvel last time.
Yeah.
We might as well do DC. Now, this was something that we were thinking about and talking through it. And I said, you know what? We haven't seen this in a while, so let's watch it. Now, This is the 1990 Flash. We're doing the Flash.
Yay.
Central City used to be a peaceful place. Now, something dark and terrifying is erupting from the city's core.
I thought you were upstairs. What do you think you are doing?
Central City is crumbling. Its people live in fear. And they will watch as we destroy their hero cops one by one.
Cross-reference against the sample from that gun shop they hit on Tuesday.
Barry Allen is a scientist, not a hero. But when lightning strikes, it transforms the ordinary into the extraordinary.
Heart rate is accelerating. Muscle tissue expanding. You're holding at 200 miles per hour. 300.
47 miles an hour.
That was before the equipment crashed.
What's happening to me?
While the city goes crazy, so does Barry's metabolism.
I can't believe it was over so quickly. After all that anticipation, why bother?
20 bucks for a fight that's over in 2 rounds.
The question is, which will blow up first?
No more games. I want you to build a hood. Let's cover my face so no one will know who I am. You know that insignia they all wear on their backs? Well, I've got one of my own.
Because The Flash isn't technically a movie. It is. We're doing the first ever TV pilot on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I thought of it. I mean, I've never watched the actual series. I remember this was kind of like marketed as a movie back in when I was a kid, because I don't think we had the Flash TV series in the UK. So the TV pilot, because it was feature length, was kind of like advertised in video rental places as just like a movie. And I thought it was just a film. I didn't know there was a TV series back then. So I just thought of it, and I still, until recently, and like doing a bit of research and stuff, I thought it was a film for a long time.
But now you know, it's actually a pilot episode for the season of The Flash, which I actually remember watching later down the line as a kid. Mm. I remember watching it. It was great. It was a goodish show. Like, it wasn't as one of the better shows, but it had some good stuff in it. Like Mark Hamill as being the trickster, which is awesome. But it's a good, it was a decent show, but they marketed and sold off the idea that they were going to try and sell the sort of the they were trying to pitch the idea that the pilot episode, which we're going to get a little bit of information about all this, was going to be almost was sold, like you said, as a big movie event. But it was for television. So it was like supposed to be this big television movie event that was going to be The Flash. It's The Flash movie. You liked Batman? Well, we now have The Flash. And it's that kind of marketing. It's kind of aggressive how it was sold that way.
Yeah, and it's got a bit of the feel of like the Batman, hasn't it? I mean, it's got like the composer, Danny Elfman, did the music, so that always helps, I think, get the right composer for a superhero movie, and it'll sound really grand and kind of like that 90s superhero kind of aesthetic, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it had, like you mentioned, Danny Elfman did do the theme tune, the theme song for The Flash.
Yeah.
And did the composing for the first episode. all the other episodes after that was done by Shirley Walker, but tried to imitate a lot of the Danny Elfman feel to it.
I guess a bit like the Batman animated series. Obviously, he did the theme for that. And then other composers just like emulated his music, didn't they, for the other episodes?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
So there we go. Now, so for those who may be thinking what the hell we're talking about, well, in 1990, there was a TV series of The Flash, which must have fallen under the radar, must not have been as popular as people thought, because you didn't even know this was a TV series until very recently. So we're going to have a look into that. So The Flash was an American TV series developed by the writing team of Danny Bilsman and Paul DeMeo that was aired on CBS on September 20th, 1990 till May 1991. It was based on the DC comic book character of Barry Allen, a.k.a. The Flash, a costume superhero crime fighter with the power to move at superhuman speeds.
Yeah.
Now, one of the biggest selling points that you had for me to rewatch this is the fact that The Flash is played by John Wesley Shipp, which you said, like, oh, it's the dad from Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, it's Mitch Leary, Dawson's dad. He's such a stud. He's like a typical like Gillette model kind of dad, isn't he? Like,
but the thing is, looking back at this, because it's been a long time since I've seen TV series. John Wesley Shipp back in his heyday was a handsome man.
Definitely, like, yeah. Wow. Yeah, yeah. So, he's got like the proper thick like square jaw, hasn't he? And he's just like he's a man you want to be saved by, isn't he? We're watching like Dawson's Creek at the moment, like going through Dawson's Creek on Channel 4, you know, all four, like the on demand type of thing. And so I'm seeing a lot of older John Wesley Shipp at the moment. He's not in it as much as you'd think, but because he's not the main character. But yeah, he's a friendly face to me.
And now you've got to watch him again in the pilot episode and just saying, oh, look at that. There you go. This is the thing. The idea for this episode was predominantly you saying we're going to The Flash because it stars the guy from Dawson's Creek.
And also because I own it on VHS and you've got gold little things like this at the start.
This show has been classified PG. That stands for parental guidance, which means that parents might want to check up on it before showing it to their younger children.
So British.
If it's an action film, it might have some violence. If it's romantic, it might have some sexy scenes or very brief
sexy scenes.
It might also have some of the milder swear words.
Yeah.
I love that British broadcaster type voice. So you don't get like voiceover like that anymore.
You don't. And that's an interesting thing.
It might contain some sexy scenes.
I like, somebody needs to elaborate what sexy scenes are entirely, because there's different levels of sexy. In this episode, there was probably one sexy scene. It wasn't really a sex scene. It was just like them cuddling afterwards in bed, wasn't it?
I've got a clip of that, but I'll play it when we get to it. It's got a really bad kind of like gag.
Let's just go very quickly the summary of the entire show, but realistically, we're going to go for the gist. We're only going to be talking about the pilot. We're not doing the whole Jesus. The entire thing would take us days.
Yeah.
So, because each episode, I believe, was about a 30 to 45 minute episode.
Yeah.
So, imagine watching all 22 episodes of that. Would have been exhausting. So, Barry Allen, who in this version, I believe, is a forensic scientist working for the Central City Police, is struck by lightning and dosed in chemicals in his lab. He soon develops super speed and creates a superhero identity to fight crime known as The Flash. A research scientist called Tina McGee.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
McGee. Ugh. I'm sorry, I hate the McGee. Sounds like it's a terrible way. I can't pronounce it properly. It sounds gross. Tina McGee works in Star Labs and helps Barry fight crime while trying to understand how his powers are developing, which also later on sort of feels like it's going to be a love interest, but we'll explain that in a minute. Barry tries to then maintain his private life and while still trying to keep his superhero identity from his colleagues, his boss, Lieutenant Garfield, and his best friend, Julio Mendez, who's, again, a lot of recognizable faces here. Like Julio Mendez is played by Alex Desert, and he's a he's recognizable. You've seen him in a lot of stuff. Same with like Amanda Pays and a whole bunch of different people. They're all kind of, there's not people you haven't seen before in like the 80s and 90s.
Oh yeah, definitely familiar, yeah.
But the weird thing about all this is the production and what they've tried to do with it. Now, development of the series began in 1988 when Warner Brothers tried to develop a TV series based, trying to develop things on the DC comic characters. Danny and Paul then conceived to feature several superheroes. He wanted to do sort of like a Justice League idea at the beginning.
Yeah.
They wanted to jump the ship and say, you know what, you don't need to know everyone else. Everyone knows Superman, Wonder Woman, all that. Let's make the Justice League now. But they weren't too hot about it. But they did say that the moment they found out how Batman 1989 did was such a huge success, they decided to say, you know what, we'll focus on one, but we want to keep it in the similar mood as that. And that's when The Flash was announced. They wrote the pilot, which was completed in 1990, and they filmed the pilot of this episode in 6 weeks. Wow. And the final six whole weeks, and the final effects for the pilot were completed a week before it was aired.
God.
Wow. It was kind of tight.
Really quick turnaround then, yeah.
Humongously so. So they had everything filmed between May and June, and then by just a week before the launch in September, it was done. Bilson actually then said that there were 125 special effects in the pilot episode alone, and it was done on a grand scale, but always felt that even then they could have done more with it. This is one thing that kind of surprised me. The 2 hour long pilot episode. Do you know how much that episode alone cost?
I don't know, a few million. Like it looked like it was really, really like high production value for a TV movie. Anyway,
it was $6 million to make the first episode, and then every other episode after that cost about $1.7 million to make.
Wow!
This was at the time in 1990 the most expensive TV show ever made. Now things have trumped it, like things like Lost and things like Game of Thrones have trumped all this. But at the time, $6 million for the pilot episode, and then $1.6 million per episode after that. This was costing Warner Brothers a lot of money.
Yeah, a bit higher production value than the event Lois and Clark then.
Hell yeah! Wow, Lois and Clark.
Or that was also known as the New Adventures of Superman. So it was like known as that over here. Like in the US, it was always Lois and Clark, wasn't it?
Yeah, but here's the weird thing about that one is because that series aimed at not really Superman, wasn't it? It felt like it was very weird how a show about Superman felt very much like it had not a lot to do with Superman.
You got the legendary Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher in that one.
Oh, whoop-de-doo.
I loved those guys at the time, but I bet if you watch an episode of it now, I bet it'd be so cringe. I bet it'd be like two 90s.
It's almost very similar to how I feel when I watch Charmed. Yes. Where it's the same thing. I watch Charmed and go like, oh, that is very late 90s, early noughties, isn't it? What is this? I'm having nightmares. Right. What do you think of the costume? Before we go into anything else, obviously The Flash is famous for his red costume and lightning bolt. What do you think of the costume?
I still like it. I mean, I really loved it at the time. And I still like it now. I mean, it's the thing is, the Flash costume, you can only really sort of do it in a certain way. It's kind of got to have a certain look. But I love, like, it's got this weird kind of, like, texture to it. So it almost looks like it's, like a suede or something. It's, like, a really odd kind of texture. But it looks really cool. It's definitely looks like it's got a bit of an influence from the Batman 89 one, but I don't know whether that's true. I might just be...
Well, actually, there is. According to this, there were 4 Flash costumes made for the series, right? So 4 of them. Each one cost $100,000, right? Expensive suit. On the suit, the writers actually said that John had to have an entire body cast. So just imagine him in a pool, just lying down. Right, we're just going to mold this to you. right? The suit was made out of latex. The suit was made out of latex, but it was quite. It was quite difficult to process how getting it right. And he actually did say that the suit was critical. You cannot, after Batman, have just a guy running around in tights.
No, definitely not.
So that's actually his words after that. So
I mean, the Flash. You would think you expect him to be a bit more kind of like athletic looking, but Wesley Shipp's like really buff, isn't he? He's like really he was really sort of ripped and buff in this movie, so the suit, look, he looks so muscular in it, doesn't he?
How can I describe this nicely? He's a bit of a human triangle. He's got such broad shoulders. It's just bulging. There's no way he can be like slim and athletic like the other versions of the Flash have come up afterwards. This big guy, right? The Flash costume was designed and created by Robert Short and Bilton Studios. The Short said the latex suits were specifically treated to disguise their rubber surfaces, hence the extra muscles and so on. So it would look like a stretch under like a unitard.
Yeah.
And Shipp wore water-colored undergarments to combat the heat of the suit.
Mm.
So this one was actually more practical than the Batman suit. Which, you know, I'm not going to lie, Tim Burton's Batman suit. Batman can't even turn his head, right?
Yeah, especially the version in the first film. It's like when Michael Keaton has to turn abruptly, he kind of has to turn his whole body, doesn't he? And it makes for some, like, awkward action scenes, but, like, they changed it, obviously, for Batman Returns, but, like, yeah.
Right. He also then said that Bob Miller also said that everyone else in the costume department, realistically, they wanted everyone to be as comfortable as possible, including Amanda Pays, which he says, and I quote, unaggressive clothing is how they described her costume, which is okay. Though she is an aggressive career woman, she is wearing unaggressive clothing.
Right, okay.
Which, in other words, basically saying that she wears frumpy outfits, basically.
Yeah. They didn't want to sexualize her or anything.
Barely, because the idea is that she's wearing 1930s and 1940s sort of shirts and slacks and vests. And she is got nothing sexy going on. She's all frumpy.
Which is surprising for the era, because that was a time when they just made, a lot of the time, they just made the female characters just like the sex appeal and that's it.
When it finally got broadcast, this was what happened. It got, the promotion for this, before getting into it, was insane. The marketing began marketing in July 1990. They started broadcasting it in NBA games, and then they did it all between things like wrestling matches and the Family Channel, as well as linking the TV series with the comic book, etc. And they were, and even having 4-minute promos at Six Flags, just full blown on a screen, 4 minutes promotion. During this time, for this particularly, just the pilot episode, really promoting that this is a huge television event. Warner Brothers banners were flying all over the place, with all over the coast. It was almost inescapable. With CBS, the vice president of communications, CBS said, "We're not selling it as a comic book. The promos have to have that theatrical feel, and we want the show to have a theatrical feel."
Yeah, so it makes sense of me thinking that it was kind of this big, kind of like movie thing, you know, in the UK. Even though it wasn't in cinemas, it was advertised quite heavily as a video. A film to rent in the video shop, kind of like, and it was all, you know, it had all those big cardboard cutouts and stuff of the Flash.
Oh, they were huge. Yeah. They were all, you couldn't escape the Flash in 1990. And the first episode did really well in the ratings, right? Mm. But the reason why it didn't do very well after that is because it clashed with quite a few things.
Right.
So, for example, it was originally launched on at 8 p.m. on a Thursday, right, on television, on CBS. But it was going against other bigger shows, including The Cosby Show at the time and The Simpsons.
Oh, God, they're huge. They're, like, absolutely huge shows of that era.
So Fox was having The Simpsons. NBC had The Cosby Show, which nowadays, The Cosby Show... step back from that. Oh boy. Terrible.
It's such a shame because I really, I enjoyed the Cosby Show back in the day. It's just, you can't watch it now. You can't enjoy it now, can you? It's probably been erased from everywhere as well. Like you couldn't.
Yeah, I brought it up. So now people are going to be thinking like, now after debuting, right, they saw that they were going to have problems. So the second episode was launched half an hour later, so at 8:30. So people who were not really trained to it, let's say, oh, we're starting at 8. And then going like, okay. And I said, okay, so it's going to be 8 o'clock every week, yeah? No, it was doing 8:30 because they don't want to compete against The Simpsons and The Cosby Show, which was weird at the time because they were still technically hour-long, so you would never put an hour-long show in a half-an-hour situational slot. That makes sense?
Yeah.
They attempted to do that. But then the problem was it was an attempt to fight off against other shows, things like Babes and A Different World and all these kind of American shows. The thing is, that's the problem. Is this is all American issues, right? Eventually, after a few episodes later, they removed it entirely from Thursday nights and moved it to Saturday nights. But then the problem with that was by that time, because you've moved the show so much, people just stopped watching it, and then it only ended on the first season.
Yeah, you definitely need to. The thing is, I mean, we make like sort of content and stuff like that. We were starting to realize that you kind of have to be consistent. You have to, if you want to do a series, you kind of have to show it the same time each week, same day, and you just have to keep doing that. Otherwise, people are just going to forget when it's on and get frustrated, and it's just like one of those things. Those clashings, did they come later down the line as the series was going on, or was it like right from the pilot?
From the off.
I suppose
that's the thing, though. Even though CBS were really pushing that this is a theater, this is almost like going to the theater, right? You're like, this is like going to the movies, but as a TV show. They were really pushing that in. You like Batman? We got you The Flash. Didn't work. So they decided to, once all that was done, though, they did decide to launch several episodes, edit it together, and launch them on VHS, which was obviously the two-hour pilot episode, as the one you saw. There was called The Flash 2, The Revenge of the Trickster, which were the two episodes that involved the Trickster, re-edited to make it a 90-minute to two-hour-long movie.
Right. I've not seen that, but I've seen pictures of Mark Hamill in the costume and all that neon colours, all those 90s neon colours. He looks so good.
It's so cheesy camp. I love it. And then you have The Flash 3, The Deadly Nightshade, which was formed by episodes including Ghost in the Machine and The Deadly Nightshade. So they were trying, I think what they tried to do there is try to look at it, right, which were our standout episodes? We need to make some money out of this. Let's sell Office VHS. And that's where a lot of people now have probably found out about the Flash TV series is through those VHS movies.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I just watched the first one back in the day, but yeah, that is, I can imagine, I can see why they're doing it. They're trying to like combat the whole errors and it went wrong with it being on TV, weren't they? Like you say, and just, well, we're going to, because if it's costing $1 million each episode, you really got to try and make the money back somewhere, haven't you?
Yeah, they were really, really disappointed at it because they had huge ideas for season two, especially being they were going to bring in so many different kinds of villains from the Flash Rogue Library, because the Flash actually has quite a lot of villains, even though some of them are really goofy, like Reverse Flash and other things like that. But they were going to bring a whole bunch of them in, and they were going to have people from the first season and second season come back, and they were all going to do sort of basically like a Sinister Six, aka kind of a league of bad guys, all just working together to beat the Flash, because they've all just been beaten up by the Flash terribly.
I mean, but like when like the movie kicks off at the beginning, you get like this epic kind of Flash logo with the Danny Elfman music, and it's such a good start, isn't it? It's like this.
Brilliant.
Da, 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 da. It's like
it's
epic.
Such a mood seller. It's such a mood setter.
And the Flash logo kind of like it flashes across the screen. You got like a thunderbolt, and it's just like, and then it sort of it goes to the city skyline behind, and kind of at night, and it's kind of it's got that dark DC vibe, hasn't it? And it's really kind of like sets the tone like really well. Like,
do you know what's good about it? It's like that to me, the show, that episode, and just all the other episodes that followed after, kind of knew that they weren't going to replicate entirely the Tim Burton look of how Gotham was, but they did where they were trying to keep the dark and moody tone of it. So they were doing like interesting neon lighting, or they would just do nice angles of different things and loads of smoke, things like that, that made it moody. And the opening shots, when you see the chemical factory, you know, the big sort of the big chemical factory and all that kind of stuff there, and you see that lit by multicolored neon lights, and then down the street when it's quiet, you see I think you see the first shot is, I think, this mother saying, "I told you to stay outside." As if, I love it because as if everybody knows, like, shit's about to go down, and we didn't know. Like, just stuff happens, and then an army of motorcyclists, speaking of motorcyclists, from what I was mentioning before, just this army of people in like Harley Davidsons running in, throwing what looks like they're grenades. That's not a grenade.
Did they have like petrol bombs and stuff, or is it just like
it's just those bright neon green balls that happen to explode on impact?
I suppose because it's like a PG, they can't be too violent, can they? That's the downside. But yeah,
you say that, but in this episode alone, there is a horrifically nasty death. So basically, it turns out that there is an evil motorcycle gang who is taking over Central City and are just, by the sound of things, just bombing things up for the sake of it. Like, there doesn't seem to be a very logical plan with these guys.
Yeah, and then shortly after that, you kind of move to the family, don't you? Like the flat, the Barry's family, and they're having like dinner and stuff like that. And there's like the dad is like always sort of praising Jay, the other son, isn't he? Like, and there's a bit of brotherly rivalry there. But there's an excellent exposition dump that the dad says to put you up to speed of what Jay does. And I'll play that.
I don't play it.
I just wish for a little bit of my brother's brains.
Hey, leave me out of this. You're not doing so bad on your own, Jay.
Yeah, hell, 42 years old, commander of the motorcycle division, I think you're doing pretty damn well for yourself. Not to mention digging down that Conway and his hijacking crew.
Well, actually, Dad, I was burying the crime lab boys you put us on to Conway.
Yeah, I mean, sure, lab boys are important, but real cops, you know, work the street, facing the scum of the earth, with nothing to back you up but a gun,
a badge, and a prayer.
Okay, Dad.
Okay, who wants coffee?
So he's quite innocent in that scene, but it becomes, like, later on, the fact that he kind of just wants to prove himself to his dad, doesn't he? He's like, he's a scientist, he's not a hero, he's like his brother kind of thing. And that's a theme that goes throughout the movie.
Yeah, but this is the thing. I mean, out of all the characters I did not like, I didn't like the dad. And in that little paragraph alone, you know exactly his character.
Yeah,
dad character like that. He loves the one who's going out there and solving crimes. He respects Barry, but he doesn't like him as much as the guy who's on the streets with a gun taking down the crimes while he's in the lab. Even though the brother said, "Hey, if it wasn't for Barry's lab work, we wouldn't have found him." So you've got to give him some props.
Yeah, I mean, the brother obviously gives like Barry like loads of respect and stuff. But yeah, the dad, I think it's because the dad was probably a street cop as well. I think he was, wasn't he? So he's Jay is basically like a younger version of him, isn't he? And yet Barry's like the smart guy who's not like the street cop. But yeah, they should equally should get his full respect.
You know, it really kind of felt like, okay, boomer, step back, like you're getting a respect to the new wave of science here. That's the thing that was missing. Girlfriend of Barry, even though she says a couple of things, we're not really entirely sure what she does, other than that she's an artiste that uses computers.
Well, she's just, I think she's just meant to be a professional artist, isn't she? Because she has her stuff in galleries and things like that, doesn't she? But she's just a generic like artist from the 90s, isn't she?
She even looks it. I mean, she's wearing even the Blossom hat. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Like, she's got the Blossom hat. She's got, like, the outfit. She's like, oh, I'm free spirit, man,
Is it me, or does she look, like, too young for him as well? I think Wesley Shipp just always looks like a very mature man. I think even back then, I think it's mainly because I think of him as Dawson's dad, but, like...
Barry Allen isn't supposed to be this old.
No.
I think. I mean, Barry Allen, or just from The Flash in general, a lot of the other Flashes were considered quite young. I don't know, maybe you're just a little old.
I like the way they, because he's the younger brother, they had to make the brother even older, didn't they? So he's like gray and stuff.
They're not the same age. Yeah. Not the same age, but they had to make the older brother older by giving him gray hair. It's brilliant.
So he, like, the brother looks almost as old as the dad.
It's ridiculous. It's weird. So at this dinner, Barry gets a beeper. He's like, "Oh, I gotta get to the lab." So he's about to go to the lab. But here's an interesting, weird conversation they were having, where Barry gives his brother a present, which was a track medal that he somehow just kept for 20 years. Just kept it.
Yeah.
It doesn't explain why he keeps it or whatever. Like, it doesn't explain. It's just like, "Oh, I just kept it." It's like, "I thought I lost it. No, I just kept it." And even he says, and you waited nearly a decade and a half to give this to me? You know?
Yeah, like, it's pretty silly, but yeah, it's quite fun. So, the little cheesy moments like that are kind of like quite charming, though. It's weird.
Which is good, because at least, for this viewing, it was actually quite nice. It was quite tolerable to watch this entire pilot, because the pilot really wasn't that bad.
No, I suppose we're kind of reviewing it because it didn't do well. So we sometimes do movies that were like misunderstood, or TV shows that are misunderstood, and kind of like, and also it kind of counts if it's got a lot of cheesy kind of stuff. It kind of counts.
It is pretty cheesy. Like, for example, they get into the lab. So Barry goes to the lab and they meet Julio, who's his best buddy, right?
Oh, actually, before they get to, is that this is the bit where basically there's like a TV reporter trying to get a scoop, and like they interview him as he comes in, and I'll play the clip.
Linda Park, WCCN News. What can you tell us about this assault on the Arsenal and the Watchman's murder?
Well, I just got here. And
is it true the Riders have taken automatic weapons and explosives?
Well, I don't know, but
is there another officer we can speak with?
Well, here comes one now.
What department are you?
No. Crime lab. Want to film a spore and plaster to tire tracks?
Cut it. Let's see.
They're really hammering in.
We'll see if you can find us a real newscaster while you're at it. I swear she was on the shopping channel selling earrings last week.
So she says, let's find a real detective. So again, that's the whole like thing where, yeah, he's got his dad. His dad saying to him that he's not a real detective in a way, and then like she's saying it as well. So lots of things are coming at him with like, "Yeah, you're not a real cop."
Oh, because you like science? Because you're a nerd. You can't. You're not a real cop if you're a nerd.
In most situations, he kind of brushes it off like it's joking, but you can tell it's kind of got to him. Because he becomes the Flash, for God's sake.
Well, actually, before we get into the lab, let's talk about the gang itself. So we got Pike, who, let's describe how Pike looks like for a minute.
He kind of looks a bit like Snake Plissken.
Instantly got Snake Plissken without the eye patch. Yeah. But he's got this weird sort of scarring around his face that looks like a face tattoo.
Yeah.
Even though it isn't. And it turns out that Pike was the former police officer. It was a former police officer for Central City Police, but was the former partner of Jay.
Yeah.
Which makes it all like, ooh. And it's just basically, it's him running a cult, basically, trying to say, "We're taking down society, man." It's all a bunch of air wiffle waffle, basically.
Yeah, it's just one of those a bit of cliche things, like where, like, he's sort of like all the outcasts he's kind of like given a home to, and he's kind of like, "Yeah, I'll provide for you now," and that kind of thing, isn't it? Like a typical cult situation, isn't it? Yeah, like you say.
But then, wasn't there one guy who's trying to say, like, "Look, it's like, yeah, babe, we're getting out of here, man. I don't want to be involved in this anymore. This is getting crazy," right? And I think he's going to try and say, like, he's going to try and escape with his girlfriend and go off, and you know, I think he had money, and just going to escape the cult, whatever it is. And then he gets caught.
Yeah.
And then, this is what I mean by this bit is incredibly violent. And do you have a clip for some of these bits all this happening?
Well, basically, I love this bit, because he says that to the girlfriend, you know, like you said, like, "Well, let's get out of here." So she wanders off, goes behind a curtain, and obviously whispers into Pike's ear, but you haven't seen Pike yet. And Pike comes out from the curtain, and this plays. That is a curtain flap and Pike entering the room. How grand.
Dracula walked in the room.
And yeah, basically, he makes a spectacle of this guy, and like in front of everybody, and he has this really sort of like elaborate kind of speech where about I'll just play it so you can hear it.
Play it.
In the days of Genghis Khan, a disloyal warrior was tied to a wild horse and then set free. His punishment was left to fate.
So basically, they just tie him to the motorcycle, don't they, and kind of like just drive off.
So this is what they do. This is the way they do, right? So they tie him up, they hog tie him onto the motorcycle, which is true. But they put a grenade in there.
And then
they let the motorcycle go down the tunnel, and then explodes.
Yeah.
And then we don't see the death, but that to me is going. When you say, like, oh, this is not really that violent, isn't it? It's like, that's pretty violent!
It's funny, isn't it, how they could get away with certain violence on, like, TV and movies and stuff. You could have explosions and stuff. Like, people could die, like, horribly from explosions. But as long as you didn't see, like, blood and, like, sort of limbs being blown off or whatever, then it's fine. It's weird, isn't it? It's what you don't see is fine.
But yeah, so that happened. And that's just basically to prove that Pike is a mean son of a bitch, basically.
But the thing is, though, I love the fact that he goes like, his punishment was left to fate. It's not really fate, though, is it? He's put in that situation.
You shoved him in there and the grenade blew up because you put a grenade in there. And then you was bound to die. Like, there was no way. It's like saying, oh, maybe you'll just drive off into the sunset. That ain't how it works, mate.
It's pretty good. So we kind of skipped ahead a little bit because there's Barry's accident, isn't there, in the lab that point.
Which we're going to talk about now. Yeah. They're in the lab. He's doing overtime stuff and everything else. Julio, they say, like, Julio, you can go. I'll do the rest of this on my own. Just as it goes out, the accident happens. Now, the accident is actually done... The accident is done pretty cheesily and, I'll be honest, quite quickly and quite randomly.
I've got a clip. It's mostly just sound because, obviously, it's a visual thing. But let's see if we can, like, get an idea from the sound.
Go for it.
So it's like ridiculously theatrical music and you get this massive lightning bolt that just like strikes chemicals, doesn't it, in the lab. And you can hear then like there's a big explosion. It blows Barry back and like with the explosion and all the chemicals just like engulf him, don't they, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, okay, look, we know that it's a thunderstorm because we hear it for a while, right? We hear the thunderstorm and so on. But the lightning happens really quickly and really randomly, right? Because it seems to magically, the lightning seems to magically go through the window and strike there. I'm like, wow, that is threading the needle, mate.
Yeah, it is a bit, the accident is handled a bit like a cartoon, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit too random, but this then leads to the whole, like, this leads to the whole of him getting the superpowers. And when he gets the superpowers, He's in the hospital saying, look, I'm absolutely fine. I look great. I'm not even a burn mark, which is ridiculous, right? And people say, no, you should stay here for a few days to do some tests. Like, I don't need tests, basically. He's getting really cocky. Like, I don't need tests. I'm fine. I'm going to continue on with my work, right?
Yeah.
Very, very, very career focused there. But obviously he gets back into work and he starts to realize that certain things are not really working the way they're supposed to. And this is where he's revealing he has his powers. And each time he does that, it's quite funny how he discovers his powers, really.
Yeah, there's this certain scene where he's at the park, this is quite early on, and he's basically playing like with his dog, and he's playing like throwing the ball around. And there's a bit where the dog runs off, And he's like, he's like saying that's not our ball. And basically, it's like, it'll get, I'll play it now. You can hear him now just racing ahead after this poor.
Yeah, so he rushes. He's got the dog on a leash as and well, I think, while we think.
Listen
about
to the music. It's got the wah, wah, wah kind of comedy caper music. Because he ends up in a bush, doesn't he, basically?
Yeah.
He ends up going stupidly fast, like, after this ball. I'm trying to remember, like, does the dog just get dragged along that fast?
No, because first of all, the dog is chasing the ball. The dog is running right with it, right? Then he tries to catch up with the speed.
Oh,
the
and
dog.
He overtakes the dog, and
he overtakes the dog.
Yeah,
dropping the leash, runs through a bush and misses the ball. Now, at this point, the dog is now terrified of him because it's like, oh my God, what the hell is that? Which happens quite often. There's a clip later on where when it says, okay, I'm gonna give you for a walk. The dog just gets up, walks into the closet, and closes the door.
Yeah.
Because it says, no, I'm not joining you. I know how walkies are like. Hell no, am I doing that?
That's one of those particular things that's like definitely of the era where, you know, an animal is a bit too smart. It's like, a regular dog would I be able to like do that?
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's another bit later on where he realizes he's got a flat tire on his car, which is random, but okay. So he decides to try and run for the bus. But he gains too much speed and he ends up into the ocean.
Yeah, so I've got a clip of that. That is, I love that bit when he just goes, you just start, yeah, I'll just run there, it'd be fine. And then you just keep going. And there's a lot of like sort of speeded up clips of him going faster and faster. And it's like this.
Barry, are you okay?
Yeah.
Where are you?
Crystal Beach.
Crystal Beach? Barry, I know you don't take my art very seriously, but I thought you'd at least show up.
I tried. This will sound crazy, but I had a flat tire, so I ran for a bus, and suddenly, here I was.
You're right, it does sound crazy.
Yeah.
Iris, we'll talk about it, all right? Can you just come down here and pick me up?
It's weird, because like, in my memory of that scene from a kid, I thought he ended up in, like, I pictured it in my mind as him ending up in Miami Beach. But it's just a beach that's downtown. I thought he went, like, sort of cross-country or something.
Oh, that would have been hilarious. He said, like, hey, I'm in Florida now. And it's like, how the hell did he get that? Don't ask. But this is the thing. This is when I was starting to see the visual effects of the show.
Mm.
What do you think about the visual effects of the show as a whole? Because I think there's some bits which are really good and some bits which have dated terribly. So what do you think?
Yeah, I overall, it didn't sort of, you know, sometimes like effects of like the 80s and 90s, they kind of like take you out of the moment a little bit. But there's nothing really bad enough for it to do that for me, in my opinion. Like, and I, for example, I like the stuff like the scene we were just talking about, the way he goes to Crystal Beach. I liked the sort of sped up running, like where he's basically, there's a lot of first person view, but also it's flipped as well. So you can see his face going forwards. and everything's going fast around him. I really like that kind of stuff. That's kind of cool.
That was cool, but I found that one be a little hokey because his arms are like blurs, right? There's like nothing. And I think like, it's looking a bit hokey. I would have loved if he's just running normally. Like, he feels like he's running like normal, but he is super speeding it. And just like, how fast am I? You know, I thought he would have done that one. When he's finally also in the suit and doing the running part, there's some bits which I really like. I love the blur that he's left behind, which is great. I love the little blur. But then... And there's some bits which are cool, which we'll talk about later on, where there's some stop motion kind of feeling to it. But then there are some moments where you think, like, if this guy is supposed to be running at, let's say, 300 or 400 kilometers an hour, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't look like he's ran that fast from there to there because you see his full motion, which that kind of puts me off a slight bit. It's like, that ain't that fast. That look fast to me.
The next sort of bit is where he's about to sort of meet Dr. McGee, isn't it? And he gets a phone call from her because she's obviously interested in studying him and stuff like that. So there's a phone call in the in his apartment.
Why don't we talk in the morning? Meet me at 50 Garrick Avenue.
Okay, thanks, Dr. McGee. Bye.
Goodbye.
And I love the bit with the dog in this scene.
Oh, thank you, Earl. Would you like an after-dinner mint?
Because basically the dog, while he's on his phone call, there's lots of cute moments with the dog. And while he's on the phone, the dog is just literally eating all of his dinner. And he's just like, yeah, do you want an after-dinner mint? And I just kind of...
But here's the thing. No, but here's the thing as well. Another thing we've realised is because he is running so goddamn fast, he is hungry constantly.
Yeah.
And if this leads to, and this is also a running joke in the TV series as well, where he's just constantly hungry because he's burning off so many calories from all this running. Like, there's a bit later on where he meets McGee, and then he goes to like a pizzeria.
Yeah.
And you can see how he eats six pizzas whole, right? Six large pizzas. And he still looks like he's hungry. So when the waiter goes up to him, like, looking like really impressed, it's like, do you want another? And it's like, and he's looking, he's thinking like, ooh, maybe. But then he's looking at her going, nah, it's fine. Yeah. It's got that, like, it's still following that kind of level of comedy, like 90s cheesy comedy, which I think, honestly, it works fine for this because it's quite a lighthearted, in a weird way, for a show that's trying to be dark and brooding, it's got quite a bit of lightheartedness to it.
Yeah, and when, like, so the next bit, obviously, he meets Dr. McGee, and there's a very sort of bit of dialogue that's very of the time, because, yeah, I'll play it.
Barry Allen. I'm Tina McGee.
Hi.
Something wrong?
No. You're not what I expected.
Then we're even.
So is that just because she's a woman? He says that.
No, I feel like it's because...
He kind of looks her up and down, and like I think he was expecting her to be kind of something else, but he... Well, I don't know. He can't know because he's spoken to them on the phones beforehand, so he knows. I don't know why. Is it because it's a weird piece of it's a weird piece of dialogue? And when I first sort of, I assumed it was the whole woman thing, but then it's not that. But it's just
a frumpy outfit. She looks really like frumpy. Like she looks like she doesn't look like a. Maybe she just doesn't look like a scientist, which is true because she looks. She's got like weirdly like again unaggressive clothing for an aggressive career woman. So maybe that's the case. Maybe she looks a bit frumpy.
Yeah, and pretty much like from the off, they get onto like sort of testing his speed and stuff, don't they? And he's on a running machine, and there's a bit like this.
347 miles an hour.
That was before the equipment crashed. You may not have hit your top speed.
What's happening to me?
So yeah, he's on a running machine, and it just literally kind of like it starts smoking, doesn't it? Yeah,
it breaks almost instantaneously at how fast he's going. So he's going for all the tests and everything else, and you know, it's all science psychobabble, but basically it's all a bunch of stuff just to explain to the audience realistically. I think in a very concise, in a nice concise way of what the Flash is. the idea is that the Flash is sort of at the moment his cells are dying and reproducing really quickly. He's constantly rebuilding his body. He has the ability to get new muscle, new everything, so he can go stupid fast without any problem because he can burn it all off basically, which is brilliant. And they're trying to explain that.
Yeah, and I like the fact in the next scene, I've got a clip from that where he has the pizzas, but they also have that conversation, and I like the fact that he doesn't believe that he's becoming like this powerful thing, even though he can see what's happening to him. And she sort of cottons on to what's happening to him, and he still doesn't believe it. And it's funny.
Look, if you have anywhere near the power I suspect you do, the government will classify you as a security risk. They're trying to take your cells apart, trying to make 100 of them.
I think you've been reading too many comic books.
I'm being serious, Barry. I've seen it happen.
So he doesn't cotton on, does he, to begin with, that he is actually quite sort of, he's going to be a powerful thing, and the government will want to kind of get involved, but he doesn't see that, and I don't know why he wouldn't, because he's like been running at 400 miles an hour.
It's not just that, it's the fact that you have ran from your home to the beach in seconds. Yeah. By that point, you would clearly say like, okay, I've got, there's something here. McGee gives him an outfit. It's sort of like this red, it's red pull-up kind of thing, right? Which apparently says like, well, you know, you have to stop running because if you're running at super speed, all your clothes are breaking, which is true because before all the outfit, all his clothes are breaking, which is hilarious. So they test this out on a racetrack.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite a good, but do you have a clip from anything from the racetrack?
I do, yeah. So they're back to the future at the moment.
Am I right?
Barry, can you hear me?
Yeah. What's my velocity?
Holding at 480. Can you go any faster?
Can you go 88 miles per hour, Barry? A bit faster than that, I think.
Yeah.
30. 70. 20. Be careful, Barry. You're about to cause a sonic boom.
Sonic boom!
Barry?
Yeah, he's just like, you go so fast, you're calling a sonic boom.
Sorry, my ears were ringing. I'm starting to like this.
I think I'm starting to like this, he says at the end of that clip. Yeah, it's
great stuff.
It's good. Like, I love it when he starts to really embrace the powers.
He's embracing it. And he even does something quite cheeky, which is why later on you can kind of suss out that he's going to be the new, that Tina is going to be the new love interest. Because it's like, say, oh, and Tina goes, oh, I wish I could see how it's like. It says, why not? And literally just grabs her from her seat and takes her for like a spin literally like around the track at that speed. And you can see how she's flustered, like, whoa. And he's like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. But a little bit before that, with the speed test on the track, we go back to the biker, get Pike and the biker gang. And basically, Jay is on TV, and he realizes who it is, doesn't he? Pike does. And he's like, he's got a vendetta then, hasn't he? Like, and but basically, Jay is like saying how much he sort of hates the gang and stuff.
Yeah, I'll give you a statement. We're going to bury these guys. If you can hold me.
Pike.
Quiet. This is the man who betrayed me.
Love his voice.
The man who gave me my scars.
You know, I got these scars.
We've crushed his...
That guy.
We've humiliated his beloved police force.
Yeah!
It's time. You know, rallying the troops.
So he wants Jay now, doesn't he? He's kind of saying he's going to wreck the whole police, but he kind of wants his revenge against Jay.
He just wants to get Jay this time, right? Because Jay was the one who put him in that thing. Because already, Pike was already, by the sound of things, a corrupt police officer. And something's happened with that. And Jay was responsible for giving him the mess and the scars and the accidents and stuff like that. So I can't make it. They don't really go into a lot of detail as to what happened between those two.
No, but it moves on pretty quickly to the point where he's going to get his revenge. Like, a couple of scenes later, you get this.
Remember me.
He says at the end, it sounds like he's saying Dick, but he's actually saying Nick or something. I think he's, because he's called Pike, but that's his kind of like biker name, isn't it, or something?
Yes.
I think he's got like, I think he was Nick or something when he was the cop.
Unless his name is Nick Pike, which sounds horrible. Nick Pike.
But basically, that's the bit where he's basically, he's killed Jay, but he's kind of off screen, isn't it? You don't really see it.
Then Jay does die. And this is the whole thing. When Barry overhears this. Barry overhears this through like radio speak. Yeah. So like, I think was it radio? It was radio, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he goes over and says, and he's like, oh God, I have to catch him. He's like, no, I can do this now. And he just bolts, but he is just a little too late. Just a little too late to miss that.
And when he finds Jay, this is probably my favorite kind of bit from from the movie.
Jay! Jay!
Love it.
That's like, it's basically what's known as like the movie No, isn't it? But it's not a no, it's an and it's like, it's basically got like the cliche kind of like pan up, like he kind of goes and he gets smaller and smaller, but he's got his arms kind of up to the sky. It's a really good like moment though. I really like it. So pretty much like straight away after that point, he's now got the fire, hasn't he, in terms of, like, I want to do something about this. And he goes straight to like McGee pretty much, and he's on about the suit, isn't he?
Yeah,
the red suit. I need more of it.
Why?
I want you to build a hood to cover my face so no one will know who I am, and gloves so I won't leave fingerprints. Can you do that?
Well, yes, I suppose so, but I
Pike murdered Jay. I'm gonna bring him in.
Well, that's crazy. You're barely able to control your
power. That's what you called it.
Yes, and a very unstable one. You came here asking to get rid of it.
I've changed my mind.
He has pretty much instantly, just from the brother's death, hasn't he? He's like really got that fire now to be the Flash.
Yeah, and this is when actually I feel like this is where the darker, moodier thing's finally kicking in. Like, not entirely like the Batman, like 1989 Batman, but now there's a vendetta now. There's a reason behind all this, yeah? So you can see this character is no longer like, he's barely even lighthearted at all. He's now like, I'm the Flash, I'm brooding, grr. I got my brother to avenge, grr. No one's believing me because I'm a scientist, grr, right?
Yeah.
Which means at one point, he actually, because of his lab research, he was able to find the den of Pike. So the one, the hideout of Pike. So there's a whole sequence there, which I actually find quite funny, where he goes and bolts through and goes into it. And he's just messing around with the two bikers that are in there.
Yeah.
Which have you got a clip of that one, by the way? The one with the boombox?
Yeah, basically, I've got this.
Yeah.
I realize how an unhappy childhood probably led you to all this, but that's really no excuse.
And you hear, so that's the classic kind of comic book kind of line. But what I love is, you remember how he punches people in this movie? He does a really dorky punch, doesn't he?
It's kind of like a weird turn.
He doesn't put his whole body into it, and it's kind of almost like a jab. He kind of like goes, burr! Like that.
It feels weird looking at how the Flash punches.
Yeah, it's a bit of a dorky punch, and I don't know whether that's he's been directed that way, but it looks kind of odd when he punches people.
I get the weird feeling there might be slightly the restrictions of the suit, but that's just me, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, because the suit does look quite snug. Like, I bet you he was far more comfortable than he ever was in he definitely looks more comfortable than Captain America in that goddamn suit.
Yeah.
Or even Batman, to be fair, because Batman didn't look he was too comfortable in that.
I love there's an epic sort of full suit reveal moment though, where and the music is really grand. I've got a clip of that. I can't remember if it's just music though, but it's like basically, it's like the opening theme kind of bit.
Yeah.
So you hear how grand that music is. Basically, the flash speeds into frame, and it pans up the entire body from the feet, and you see the lighting is really moody as well. So you've got like just the highlight of the red on one side, and it's like the sort of street light in the streets, and that is like the whole Batman thing they're going for, isn't it? Like the moody kind of vibe, and even kind of like the villains, kind of like the bikers, they kind of like on the street and stuff. They kind of like fear him as this like sort of he's called like the Red Ghost and stuff like that, isn't he?
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's the Red Demon, the Speed Demon. It's the Red Ghost. So he's suddenly got all the nicknames, which is kind of cool. He's establishing already his stuff, right? But now this thing, he's now kind of doing this without behind McGee's back, because McGee said, look, if you are going to do this, right, I need sensors on you so I can keep a track on you. And it's like, oh, you're doing this for the science. No, you're doing it for revenge. That's fine. But I need to be sure that you are safe out there, because you're still having problems. Like you're having seizures and being incredibly dehydrated and all this stuff happening. So I need to be sure you're safe if you're going to do this bollocks. And, you know, she's standing her ground like, God damn it. And he's like, fine.
Yeah.
It's like, fine, I'll do the sensor thing. Which is funny because this is the thing is, McGee didn't tell Barry that she is following him around in a truck.
Yeah. Well, it's like around this sort of time as well, you get, because there's some nice little side characters in this. Remember the comedy kind of cops?
Yeah,
he basically ends up like getting into a bit of bother, doesn't he? Like when he's first going out in the suit, and he ends up randomly like sort of being sort of quite drained all the way down, and like these cops like find him, don't they? And they give him a lift home because he hasn't got any. His powers are fully drained by that point. He hasn't kind of. That's when he's like not under the sort of supervision of McGee, isn't it? That particular point.
Yeah, because he removes the suit.
Yeah,
because he got stabbed in the leg, and he removes the suit.
Yeah,
because he's like, oh, I can't run because I'm limping, and oh, I'm too tired suddenly.
And the cops find him. I love these cops.
Look, I know those guys from the crime lab are whacked out, man. But did you check his red boots? I'm sorry.
Come on, Murph. Will you give the poor guy a break? I mean, how would you act if you got hit by lightning?
Oh, I'd probably go out and buy red boots.
See, there's just little comedy bits in there that I kind of like. It feels quite like TV, but it also feels like it's got that like buddy cop kind of vibe that you get in. Mm. You got that kind of comedy you get in like buddy cop films, and there's a little bit of that and a little bit of funny sort of side characters, and I kind of like that kind of stuff.
There's another bit as well, which we forgot to mention as well. Another lighthearted moment is when the girlfriend is coming over for a visit. And he realizes that his house is a dump. So he tries to clean the house, but he does it so quickly that a cyclone happens in this house and just causes more mess.
Yeah, first of all, it looks like it's doing all right. He's kind of just going around, sort of tidying up quickly. But then he tries to pick up the pace, doesn't he? And then he just, like, everything is just going everywhere. And he sort of, like, just gives up, doesn't he, then? But you get, like, that bit, you've got some sort of classical music playing over it, haven't you? It's like, do-do-do-do-do-do, something like that.
And then this then leads to him explaining to the girlfriend. The girlfriend at one moment in time looks like they're about to break up, and then later on in the show, in the episode, they meet up again and they look like they're about to have that sexy scene that we were talking about. Well, let's see how that sexy scene went. I'm assuming you have a clip for that.
Well, I've got a clip of the I've got a clip of the gag.
I can't believe it was over so quickly.
Disappointed?
Well, yeah. After all that anticipation, why bother?
$20 for a fight that's over in two rounds.
So he's talking about the boxing, the pay-per-view boxing, but it's like, obviously, because he's the Flash and they're in bed together, you've got this like gag that he's quick in bed as well, haven't you? But
although I would kind of love the fact that he may be, you know, imagine having sex with the Flash. Like, that is... would that be fun, or would it be over really quickly, or would it be, I don't know, what would happen? Would you just be like, it's like, you haven't realised it, but we've done it 7 times.
Well, the thing is, I mean, it's just like, his speed is just from, like, running and stuff, so I don't think... I don't think that would be a fast thing, and he can control the speed, can't he? He can go fast when he wants to go fast.
I'm just having a funny thought that maybe, you know, you know, what if he's like into it and he gets into it and then suddenly he gets so into it that he forgets and he just goes zoom, you know? It could happen. It could happen.
Like accidentally impregnated about five times.
He's like, I'm sorry, it's been five times. Apparently you haven't realized it, but we've done this like seven times now. It's been a minute. Yeah, but it's been a very good minute for me. He finally gets all the information ready to go and take down Pike. So he finally is at the ready. He's finally able to go and take down Pike. He finds out that he's in the old warehouse. It's also a chemical factory. But he knows that they're trying to break into the prison, I believe it is, to try and take out all of the other members of the gang. And this is where we finally see the Flash in his full form, and I kind of like it, especially some of the cases where he's doing, the way he does the fights, it's almost like stop motion, which I kind of like, because he's going so fast, you don't see the full movement. So he is purposely quite jittery when he's doing punches and kicks and throws around all the people. Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
But do you remember that scene, though, where they've got the girlfriend of Pike in custody, and all of a sudden, Barry's gone into dirty cop mode, but like bad cop mode. And he goes, can I interrogate her? And he goes in there. He's basically, they let him in. He's a scientist. And they just let him in. And kind of, it's obviously a personal thing as well. So it's kind of like, he's got that agenda, but he goes like proper into bad cop mode in this scene. Mm.
The guys around the station think you're all on drugs, you know. Or crazy. But I know better. I know you really did see a demon. He was as red as blood, wasn't he? And fast, like a flash. So if you care about Pike, you'll tell us where he is. Because, like, if we don't find him, the Flash will. Now I know you really want to tell me. Where is he?
I can't tell you. I can't.
Take off her clothes.
Jesus.
I know, that bit got me like really like kind of like unsettled. Like, take up the clothes.
Yeah, like
take it to the lab.
Yeah, but it's just the way he's really aggressive when he says it. Take off your clothes. It's like, this is a different side of Barry, isn't it?
This is the dark and moody one we were talking about. It's like saying, now we're getting serious. We're getting like angry, grr, you know? And this is where he ends up finding, well, things are going face down Pike. What's interesting then is the whole thing in the police station is actually quite funny, because the police are finally there, like not the police station, the prison. And the police station, the police are all there, all gathered around trying to stop about. The pummeling cops accidentally see the Flash in full costume, but they don't believe it's real and all that kind of stuff.
I've got a clip of that.
Mm. Hey, Murph, I saw it. The thing, the red ghost.
Sure you did, fellows. And I'm Marie Antoinette.
No, I'm serious. He was standing right there.
What do I have to do? Check you for head wounds?
So that's the same comedy cops you heard earlier about the red boots and stuff.
Let's just kind of move on very quickly onto the sort of our final bit there, because we're now finally, we've got all these shenanigans, all the fight scenes, all the cruel little bits at the end. Although there's not a lot of fight scene in it, but when there is, it's quite good. Then we get to the confrontation with Pike, finally.
Which is a really good confrontation. It's basically quite epic.
Mm.
What are you? And where did you come from?
I came from you, Pike. You made me. When you killed my brother.
I killed a lot of men's brothers.
I love that. It's like, it's almost like, for me, it was a Tuesday. It's almost like that kind
of... Yes! It was that kind of level of ham.
Right? I love it. You made me, but yeah, the end. Pike steals that line with at the end. It's great.
Yeah, and then by the end of it, basically, Barry does a little run around. Literally grabs a rope at one point, hog ties him up, and just gets him ready to for him to be arrested. Although you can see at those moments where he just wants to kill him, but he just kind of goes, "I'm just going to tie you up and get you ready to take it to the authorities and that kind of thing. And it sort of ends on that note, really, where he stopped Pike and everything else is all good and dandy. And then it adds a confrontation with McGee.
But there's a bit, though, when he's fighting with Pike, there's a bit where he gets electrocuted, isn't it? And it looks like that would have killed him. Like, he goes into, like, a pylon or something.
Yeah, he does, because he gets up. Doesn't he just get, like, uppercutted? Like, up.
Well, no, doesn't he...
up into a ceiling.
He goes round him in, a tornado, and it sort of elevates him into some pylons, doesn't it, basically?
Yeah, see, there's a tornado. I'm seeing him, like, he's doing a couple of punches here and there. Mm. The Flash goes round him so quickly, he does the silo, you know, he does like the cyclone tornado thing. He gets launched up into the ceiling, gets electrocuted, dropped down, and then ties him up and says, and it's like, oh, he's fine, and just leaves by that point. And yeah, and then by that point, he's done with Pike. He's feeling more rewarded and better about himself. And then and at the end, the show ends. The show ends in two ways, but the first bit, the show ends, first of all, with him talking to McGee, who's finally like caught up with him because he's been being very sneaky and doing things behind his back,
yeah,
etc., etc. Do you have any clip from that last little confrontation?
No, not the bit with McGee. I've got a little bit where he's talking to the little boy.
Well, that's it. That's how it ends. So it ends then afterwards, going with the family, right?
Yeah.
He's with the family, and it all seems this is the new family now. The establishment. This is the new family now. So Julio's involved. Looks like the girlfriend's still around. I'm not sure if McGee was in the house. I don't think she was. But,
no, because you got you got the scene with him and McGee where basically just like setting up for the series. So she's going to be helping him in the series kind of thing. He basically talks. The last sort of shot, the closing sort of like scene of the movie is him talking to the son, Jay's son, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sean, I want you to know something. Anytime you need me, I'll be there for you. I couldn't run like your dad, but I'll be there in a flash.
So it's kind of a sweet moment. He plays sort of dad type roles really well. Obviously in Dawson's Creek, he's got like Dawson's dad. But whenever he's kind of like sort of in those scenes, like there he's talking to the little boy then, he's kind of really sort of genuine. Like, he's good at that kind of role.
And it's actually really sweet because it ends up, he goes over and then says afterwards, like, even though I'm not as fast as your dad, I'll still be there in a flash. Mm. And like, that is actually really, really sweet and really kind of nice. And a nice way to end that. And then that's the end of the pilot episode. I'm going to be honest. I had a good time watching this, but I will say full up and up front that this isn't too bad, to the point that I'm actually once realizing that other than sort of the 90s cheese and stuff, this was all right. And it reminded me again, like, actually, the Flash TV series was quite an underrated show and kind of needs a second look. Yeah. It was quite fun to do that. So I think, you know what, let's just go right into the Trashometer, shall we?
Okay.
So this is the Trashometer. For people who have never heard us if this is the first time you listen to us, thank you very much for listening. What we do in order to rate the movies we watch, we do something called the Trashometer. We have five different settings, and we basically judge on how trashy or how enjoyably trashy the film, or in this case, the TV pilot, was. We start off at the very bottom, which is tame. Tame means that there wasn't really anything trashy about it, or it was actually generally just quite boring. You then have a tiny bit trashy, where it's got a little few elements of fun and quirkiness, but it's not pure trash fun yet. Then in the middle, you've got trash. It's the sweet spot, the golden goose. It's the ultimate thing that you want to be if you want to be a good trashy movie. Too trashy is when it's starting to start pushing our buttons and our boundaries. We're still having a good time, but we are having moments where we're uncomfortable or angry or whatever. And then there's torture. Torture is the worst. It is either too bad to be enjoyed, it's gone over the threshold, there's too much that angers us to really enjoy watching that movie again. So, with that in mind then, Ed, what do you think of the Flash pilot episode? Where does it fall on the Trashometer?
Well, I think this was one that I picked, wasn't it, this movie? But basically, and it was like, I was expecting it to be more trashy than it was, and more kind of like cheesy. It's got a lot of cheese, like we've spoke about, but it hasn't got enough for it to be high on the trashometer. So it's actually, I would even put it as tame. I would put it at the lowest rating. It's not boring, but in terms of like trashiness, there isn't a lot of trashiness in it. So it's kind of got to be tame. I suppose I could be pushed to maybe go tiny bit, but like, I don't think there is even tiny bits of trash.
No, I'm going to say this. This is a tame. And this is not in this case, because we've had a few other tame movies on the list. We had Doom on tame, for example. But that was because we were bored. It was Doom and it was boring. The other one was The Lift we did. The Dutch movie The Lift. But that's the reason, is because even though there were some really interesting moments, we realized the only reason why we enjoyed it is because the circumstances we watched it, not the movie itself. Here, the reason why we're putting on tame, I think, is not because it's bad. I argue it's good. It's enjoyable. It's got the 90s cheese in it, and it's got the thing like that. But it's not enjoyable because of its trashy nature. It's enjoyable because it's actually quite a decent. It's quite a decent movie. It is quite a decent show. So, yeah, do we agree it's just tame?
Yeah, it's tame, but it is good because we haven't had many tames, and it's good to kind of mix it up a little bit. And yeah, you know, I think it's because we have to have it as tame, is because even the bits that would be considered cheesy just are good. They kind of add a good element to it. So they're not negative.
And this is the thing: if this was properly funded as a movie, let's say we gave it an extra, extra $20 million, right? And you edited and you made things a little bit more there, and made it longer, and that kind of thing. I could have totally seen this as a movie as a kid, like properly in the cinema, and I would have enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah,
so I feel like this was definitely a missed opportunity, a lost cause. And the reason why it's going on the tame is because it's not bad. It's good. It's really good. And I recommend it to people, actually. Watch the series of The Flash. So we'll put it on the tame. All right, there we go. So, thank you very much for joining us on our second little adventure into the summer of superhero schlock. We've got a few more down the pipeworks. We've got about two or three more we possibly have. We've got at least a few, two, three more we're thinking of doing.
Absolutely. Cool.
So, just the sort of things wrapping up at the minute. Do you have what else have we been up to at the minute? Just sort of wrapping up, because you have launched an episode up on the. You're launching an up an episode on the Enigmatic channel about something that we were discussing last time.
Yeah, by the time this podcast goes out, it's probably going to be on. It will be online. It's basically we've launched a series on the main channel, which is Retro Saturday Rewind, and this is basically like based around sort of this Saturday morning nostalgia. So you know when you used to get up as a kid and there'd be cartoons on, but also there'd be like music on, sort of like pop stars would be featured on like shows like Going Live and stuff like that. So you got music nostalgia as well of that period, and also sort of TV shows and stuff like that. So and toys as well, like that. So anything from the 80s and 90s that we remember, like significant parts of a childhood, like cartoons, TV shows, toys, and music from that time, we're going to discuss on that show. And I'm kicking it off with a top 10, because at the moment we still can't sort of like do things together. So I kind of like wanted a bit of like just a countdown, kind of just the top 10 cartoon themes, basically, is how we're kicking off that show. But like later down the line, there'll be like reactions of like certain shows or certain music videos and stuff like that, and it's all going to be like our usual kind of format of reaction review. But there'll be a few lists in there as well, like top tens and top fives, and so that we're kicking things off with the top 10 cartoon themes, which is going to be an interesting one, because a lot of people, I had quite a lot of buzz around that. I said that I was doing it, and people were really interested in already kind of posting in comments their top 10 and favourites and whatnot. So I think that one will go down fairly well, so I'm looking forward
I think one of those as well would be good when we do that one, is hoping we can do not like watch-alongs, but it'd be nice if one episode with literally just us rewatching a cartoon from beginning to end, like an episode of a cartoon that we liked, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Where on Earth is Carmen Sandiego, all these kind of shows that I used to love watching as a kid, and just watching them and just feeling nostalgic, like while we're still in our pajamas and trying to have hot cocoa, which
yeah,
is my
so
dream.
That's like a tease of the aesthetic of that show as well, because we're basically going to we want it to be first air on a Saturday morning. That's why we gave it that name. So you're kind of watching it when you used to watch that kind of stuff, and we're going to be in our PJs on the episode.
Yes,
and it's just going to have that whole Saturday morning vibe, which I'm really looking forward to exploring, you know.
We will also have to get the most sugary of all cereals.
Yes, definitely.
Cookie Crisp is mine, by the way. I'm dibs on Cookie Crisp.
I don't think you can even get that here. Like, it was basically just cookies in a bowl, wasn't it?
I know you can get Cookie Crisp somewhere. It's just hard to find, but I know you can get Cookie Crisp, so I'm totally getting Cookie Crisp.
Actually, talking of cereals, because like there's a podcast I listen to called Blast from Our Past. And I'm looking forward to listening to their recent episode, because it is basically top 10 cereals. So they're just going to be talking about the cereals of like their childhood.
Dream, living the dream. Can't wait. So yeah, thank you. I'm dead excited for this to kick off soon. So there's loads of other stuff going on, but that's, I think, the big one that we're trying to launch out. So just as per usual, when it comes to that, listen, just go look at our social media stuff. We've always got new stuff up there, especially on Instagram. We are surprisingly more busy on Instagram than we are on other platforms. On Facebook, we're quite busy. On Twitter, we're busy, but we're busy more for the video game stuff. Everywhere else, on Instagram, we are very busy.
Yeah, I think it's good to sort of realize that each social media kind of is more dedicated to different things, because it's like, I mean, a lot of the Instagram just shares over to Facebook, but because Greg controls the Twitter and he's our Enigmatic Play host, a lot of the Twitter community is Enigmatic Play focused, but that's okay. So a lot of the play, if you're interested in a lot of the Enigmatic Play stuff, get on our Twitter.
Go for it.
And
just keep an eye on the YouTube channels, everything else, watch out for the skies, everything else, you know what I'm talking about. Just have a look on there. So yeah, we're wrapping up. Thank you guys very much for joining, and tune in next time where we're going to be doing The Punisher. Oh boy, can't wait. So until next time, keep an eye on your trash, there might be some treasure in there. See you later.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode, and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating, or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials, where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.